I'll call to order the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development. It is Monday, February 24th, and I'm proud to say that we have a quorum. Today, just as a roadmap, we will be hearing Senate File 1453 and 1624 from Senator Putnam. And those who are here on Senator Putnam's bill, he has to have his bill presented later in the afternoon. So as soon as he gets here, it depends on where we are in the agenda, and we'll call him up as soon as possible. Besides that, we are going to start off today with Senator Powell, who's going to present Senate File 1514 and 1521. And then last but certainly not least, we'll hear a bill from Senator Green that will be Senate File number 1583. As you can see, members, we will be limiting the testifiers to 2 minutes each because we have a full agenda that was posted also on the committee website, and all testifiers have been made aware of this in advance. So as you know, once you come up and you introduce yourself for the record, we will time you. Testifiers have 2 minutes, but Senator Powell, for an example, she is presenting as the bill author. She can take as much time as she wants, and then the committee can ask as many questions as necessary. And I think we're all on the same page. So with that being stated, thank you so much, Senator Powell, for being here. And you are going to present your first bill, which is Senate File 1514. Senator Powell.
Thank you, Chair Champion, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present SF 1514, which is asking for an appropriation of $1.5 million in a one-time funding for the Coalition of Asian American Leaders to support training, technical assistance, peer network development, and direct financial assistance for Asian Minnesotan women entrepreneurs and Asian-owned businesses in Minnesota. Members, this bill will help Cal scale up its program that was launched with a $200,000 state investment last year. As you know, on this committee, owning a small business is extremely challenging, no matter what background you are from. However, the barriers are even higher for entrepreneurs who don't speak English as a native language, don't have relationships with financial institutions, and are not able to find a path of lifting themselves up and their families out of poverty. This bill provides support for entrepreneurs who, with a targeted investment, can get the help they need to grow a thriving business that supports their family and supports our local economies. Investments are used to help entrepreneurs and small business owners address language barriers, navigate financial institutions, connect with other investors, and invest directly in their business through microgrants. Chair and members, thank you so much for allowing me to present this bill, and I also want to just give a shout out to Senator Herr and Senator Umu Verbaeten, who are also co-authors on this bill. Chair Champion, I do have two testifiers today to speak on the bill whenever you're ready.
Thank you so much, Senator Powell. And before we go to your testifiers, I'm going to go to Ms. Nomer so that she can give us a background of our fiscal picture, what has been provided before, and what the request is now. Ms. Nomer.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 1514 is providing $1.5 million in fiscal year 2026 and one-time funding, as Senator Paugh stated. And in the past, this same organization has received $200,000 in fiscal year 2025 in last year's jobs bill. But beyond that, before that, there hasn't been any recent funding.
Thank you so much. And would you like to go to anyone in particular first, Senator Paugh?
I'll go ahead and go to Tommy Hyung first.
If you introduce yourself for the record, and if you'd be so kind as to give us your 2 minutes of testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tao Mei Shong. I'm the Executive Network Director for the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. It is a statewide network of 5,800 Asian Americans and a total of 10,000 with our allies included in that number. Just a little bit of background, the Asian Americans make up 6.5% of the state of Minnesota's population, and there are over 20 languages spoken in our community, and we have one of the youngest populations in the state of Minnesota. So this bill actually addresses the demographics, the growing demographics here in the state of Minnesota, with the number of people who are now interested in becoming entrepreneurs. In 2020, Cal launched the Stronger Together Fund, which was a small grant program for small businesses. And through that micro grant and technical assistance and training program, we learned that the majority of the applicants, as well as the recipients, were Asian American women. Furthermore, we learned that the majority of the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs in the U.S. are Asian American women, yet they have the most difficult time accessing financial resources to be able to support their business. And much of this is due to the racial stereotypes of Asian women not being capable entrepreneurs and or having linguistic issues with being able to share their vision for their business. Last year, due to your support, Mr. Chair, and the leadership of Senator Fong Hur and Senator Pa, we were able to get $200,000, although our request was $1 million, to meet the needs of the number of Asian Americans here in Minnesota. Luckily, we were able to get $200,000 from that, and as a result, we will be able to support a handful of Asian American women entrepreneurs.
Thank you so much. That will conclude your time. We appreciate it. We will have some questions, and we'll go to your next testifier, which is Laura Bowler, who is a business owner. Identify yourself for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Hello. Good afternoon, Chair Champion and members of the committee. My name is Laura Bowler, and I'm a hairstylist, makeup artist, and owner and founder of Laura B. Beauty LLC in North Minneapolis, where I live and work. After working for other people as a hairstylist for over a decade, I took the leap of faith to open my own business in the beauty industry in 2021. I specialize in bridal hair and makeup for multicultural weddings and work with an extremely diverse clientele. It is high pressure, but I love making my clients look and feel their best on their wedding day. Starting a small business is not easy, but I am committed to putting in the hard work to provide the much-needed services in the Minnesota wedding industry. In 2023, I received a micro-grant and support from Cal to expand my business. While I was an expert in my field, I did not have the first clue about owning a business. Cal's support gave me Cal's support gave me foundational knowledge about running a business. The grant helped me invest in purchasing inclusive makeup shades and airbrush makeup to be a vendor for my first wedding fair for colorful weddings and helped pay for my flight and hotel accommodations for being a hairstylist for the first ever Asian New York Fashion Week. Since then, my business has won multiple Best of the Knot awards, which provides critical industry recognition for my potential clients. I've had the opportunity to be a lead hairstylist for Minnesota Fashion Week and the first ever Asian New York Fashion Week in New York. I've also been an active member of the Colorful Weddings Group in Minnesota, which supports BIPOC vendors, and I was also featured on Care 11. In addition to technical assistance, support from Cal has allowed me to meet other entrepreneurs, learn about additional business opportunities, and develop the confidence to expand my business with resources from financial institutions and other entities. I'm here today because I'm so grateful for Cal and to know the impact their work makes with small business owners such as myself.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And you have one last sentence. You can say it right now.
Thank you for hearing my testimony and considering this bill. I urge your support. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. I have a couple questions. Let's see. Would you be so kind as to give me a little information about Ms. Zung, about the $200,000 and what you were able to do with that $200,000 with numbers?
Yes.
That would be helpful. And then if you can tell us what would be used for the $1.5 million, and what number of people do you intend on supporting? Ms. Young.
These will be estimates. So for the $200,000, we will be able to give out 6 grants at $15,000 each.
At how much each?
$15,000. And then the rest of it is going to workshops, which the most requested workshops from our small businesses is marketing and communications, because most of it is done by word of mouth right now. The second most costly is translation and interpretation, and working with applicants to, one, read through applications for the state to get state funding and federal resources and other local resources from the city. In addition to that, we are demonstrating how to use different financial management tools so they can make sure that they do appropriate record keeping. And one of the things we require is that any business that wants to work with us has to have at least 2 years of tax returns. And so then they've already started the process of learning how to document their finances, so that this will prepare them to be able to get bigger loans and also establish relationships with financial institutions.
So Ms. Young, with the $200,000, did you provide any loans?
No loans. We don't have the capacity to do loans. You have to be trained and, we don't have a loaning institution.
And then you said that, how about workshops?
I'm sorry?
How about workshops?
The workshops are communications and marketing, financial management, the translation of just documents. It's not actually a workshop, but it takes a lot of one-on-one work. And then the other pieces is learning to use technology and tools to be able to track their inventory. And the biggest cost to folks right now is being able to manage the amount of inventory to the demand that's required.
And so maybe I should refine my question. Did you do any workshops with the $200,000 that we provided already? And if so, how many people took advantage of the workshops?
Mr. Chair, we have not done any workshops yet. We just released the RFP because we spent 2 months prepping people to be able to apply for the grant, because we wanted to make sure that they could actually apply. And that required one-on-one meetings with the applicant, as well as reviewing their applications and making sure they had the appropriate materials. And so we'll be in the process of finalizing the candidates and then conducting the workshops.
And my question is, you indicated that you all provided 6 grants. Was that for the $200,000?
Yes, we will provide 6 grants at $15,000.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out what you did with the $200,000.
Yes.
Because what I thought I heard you say is that you allocated 6 grants for the with the $200,000, and that comes to $90,000, right?
Yep.
And so can you tell me, not looking forward, but what have you done with the $200,000?
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, just to be clear, we have not used the $200,000 yet to re-grant or to provide technical assistance, because we just released the grant and provided technical assistance on the front end to get people to be able to apply. So to answer your question, $90,000 of it will be used for re-granting, and the rest of it, 5% goes to the state for admin, 5% goes to the to Cal for admin, and the rest of it goes to paying for our interpreters, as well as our financial consultants and workshop trainers. So that's what the rest of the money will be used for.
Okay, just so I'm clear, so the $200,000 has not been utilized yet, but you are saying what the $200,000 will be used for.
Yes.
So now my question is, looking forward, tell me the target number of people that you are looking to have come through your workshops, your training, your technical assistance that would justify or at least help us understand why we should be giving more than $1.3 million more dollars when the $200,000 have not been used yet.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I want to explain that the $200,000 has not been used yet because when we released the grant application, we had to do a lot of prep work to make sure that the community was ready to be able to apply so they could actually have a successful application within the application period, which was a month and a half. And so that's why the $200,000 hasn't been spent yet. Your question about the technical assistance and why we need one, the number of workshops we have in the contract, when we sign on with an applicant, they will have to come to 4 workshops. Those workshops will be catered to just the applicants who are part of that cohort so that they get really one-on-one timing. We have, as I mentioned earlier, 20 different languages that are spoken. And so far we've had 12 different ethnic groups and different languages applied who have applied for this program. And as a result of that, we know for sure we'll at least need 3 different interpreters to help us to make sure that the workshops are translated. The majority of time when folks come to the workshops, they understand enough English to get by, but they don't understand the nuances of what's required. So that's what takes a lot more time.
Let me see if there's any other questions, because I have some more questions, but I want to make sure that the rest of the committee is able to ask some questions. Yes. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions are going kind of along the lines of yours, and what would be helpful is to know, when did you receive the $200,000 from the 2024 jobs bill? I don't know the amount of time that it took for that to get into your organization's possession. I think that would be important.
Yes.
I'm not sure who could tell me that.
Well, just so you know, Senator Nelson, that when there's a direct appropriation to an organization, there's a contract that has to be established first with deed, with metrics and goals and all that sort of stuff, and then is let. So I just want to put that context there, if that would help you in any shape, form, or fashion.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Yeah, thank you for that further description. Mm-hmm. So my full question would be, has everything been done in that line to allow the funds to be dispersed? And when were they dispersed, or when are you expecting them to be?
Ms. Young.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the funds have not been released to us yet. And so, but we have the resources to be able to move forward to cover until the funds are released to us. And we're in close communication with DEED to the contract is signed and everything, and we're just waiting for the release.
You're just waiting for the what?
The release of the funds to our account.
So Ms. Nelson, Senator Nelson, just so you know, so the funds from DEED are reimbursable, so the organization is supposed to be able to have done the work. But Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I do want just clarity then, and thank you again for further describing the process. Is there anything outstanding on your part, or when has DEED told you they plan to... And have you expended the funds? So if it's a reimbursement model, have you expended any funds? And when do you expect to be reimbursed?
Ms. Young.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, we have only expended the funds for technical assistance to help applicants to apply for the grant. The application's actually due on Wednesday. And we have so far, I'll just share with you the number of applications that we have. We have 121 applications, 40 have been submitted, and 81 are left to be submitted. So we have a great amount of need for the small business grant. And as I mentioned earlier, the process has taken a little bit long because we wanted to give them as much prep work as possible to be able to have a successful application. And I'll tell you that we're getting questions as simple as, do we have to be registered with the Secretary of State's office? Yes, you have to be registered. How do I get registered? Then we explain it to them, and then we tell them, you probably won't be a good candidate for this round. You can wait for another round. So it's really like step by step that we're working with folks in multiple languages.
So just for clarity, the number that you gave us, you said there were, for technical assistance, that's the lane that you've been in.
Yep.
And that 100 plus application, is that correct?
Yes.
And in that 100, are you saying 40 have been submitted?
Yes.
And that there's another 60 or 80 that's left to be submitted?
80 that are in progress based on our database. And the applications are due on Wednesday at 4 o'clock.
So is the submitted and left to be submitted, is that supposed to be an aggregated number to reach the 100 that you said? Or because if it is, that seemed to be a little more than what you've stated, Ms. Young.
So this is based on the numbers that team members gave, and we tried to update it like just 10 minutes before we came to committee, so it might be a little bit off, but the total applications right now are 121, submitted is 40, and then in progress is 81.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
One final follow-up.
I think Ms. Normner wants to say something.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. I was just looking at the language from the 2024 jobs bill and just thought this might help the discussion. I know Senator Nelson asked about extending the funds. The $200,000 appropriated in fiscal year 2025 was made available until June 30th, 2026, so for another full fiscal year.
Okay. Senator Nelson, any follow-up before I go to Senator Herr?
Oh, yes. Thank you. And thank you for that clarification. That's a good piece of information to have, too. I just want to be very clear. To whom are the 81 left to be submitted? To whom?
To our organization.
To your organization.
Yep. So everything goes through Cal, and we just make sure that we are complying with the state regulations of how to manage a grant.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Herr.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just, as a co-author, I just want to give a shout out to Cal. You know, and it's important to hear questions because, you know, a question on accountability and how the dollar would be used, that is very important for you as chair and also our committee to make decisions and support. So I think that the question is very thorough, but I'm just going to speak in support of this this legislation, Senate File 1514. I have 3 points that I want to speak in support of it. The first point is the Asian American buying power in our state. Research done by Dr. Bruce Corey through the African, Latino, Asian, Native American show that there's $35 billion in combined with real estate and also income of buying power of Asian American contributing to our state. That I want to add that onto the content that has been presented here. The second point that I want to advocating for this bill, mainly because in 2024, the Cal has requests for $2 million, you know, and they were kind enough to say now this time we just want $1.5 million because we already have some appropriation from last time. So what they did is not asking for $2 million and getting extra dollar to add onto this, but they were more mindful that with additional dollars, they can operate better and also provide more grant and more to the intended target as they planned early on in 2024. The third shout out for them is that I trust in the experience that Cal have in terms of provide technical support and also create RFP for grant and helping communities, especially Asian American women in our community. You know, as a small business owner myself, previously, quite intimidating just to go file on Secretary of State, and at the same time, with the challenge that you face and technical problem that you have with Secretary of State, I certainly will need some help too myself. You know, as someone who know how to navigate, but I think not everybody out there are maybe up to my level. Some may be better, some are not up to my level that will need the help that Cal will provide. So that's the point, a shout out that I want to make.
Thank you, Senator Herr.
Thank you.
Just so that one is clear, some of the questions that you will always hear is us asking about what did you do with the money already? Mm-hmm. Because we have so many wonderful people who come to this dais and talk about their need, it's just like the last biennium. You can make a request, like everyone will tell you, every request that got made, we had to bring the number down. And that's more of a, that's also a, something that's going to be necessary for this biennium. That is not a reflection of what we think or feel about it. We want to do it as much as we can for as many as we can based on the House, the Senate, and or where we're going to fall. So I think that you all do good work. My questions are always about where's the money, what are we doing with it, and what case can we make in order to say that remember that $2 million I asked you for last year? You gave me $200, but now I'm asking for $1.5. Now you want to know what happened with the $200. There's always going to be that sort of thinking that that is a part of the equation. Any other questions before we go to Senator Pod to give us her closing comments before we lay Senate file number 1514 on the table for possible inclusion? Anything else from the committee? Senator Pod, you get the last word on Senate file number 1514.
Thank you, Chair Champion and members. As you can tell, there is so much need in our community and especially among Asian women entrepreneurs. As Ms. Hyung had talked about, this round of just applications that they've opened up for the last one plus month of application, they've already got 121 people who are applying. And there's only six slots that are going to be able to, applicants are going to be able to get in some kind of a grant to start a business. And so there's so much need there. And so we're hoping that this $1.5 million will be able to help the others who are applying and more that are applying through this program and through some of the workshops that they have that will be learning about this program. Again, this appropriation is for 2026 and 2027, this new appropriation. So it will be the continuing of the appropriation that we already gave last time off of that program. There's so much need, and I just want to emphasize that Asian women and men, but I would say specifically more so Asian women, just really lack the technical assistance to be able to navigate the system and navigate because of language barriers. But they are really smart entrepreneurs. Like they know their market, they know their niche, they know the actual business, but they don't always know how to manage their bookkeeping. They don't always know how to register a business. They don't always know how to get the help that they need to connect it all. And that's where CAL comes in, is that CAL really helps these entrepreneurs connect to some of those other things that they don't necessarily have that network to and resources that really help families move out of poverty and actually be able to take care of their families. And so I just want to emphasize that I see the great need in this just from the great work that CAL has done and from understanding the community. And I hope that I can count on all your support for this bill. Thank you.
With that being said, Senate file number 1521 will be laid on, 1514 will be laid on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you so much. Senator Powell, we will now go to your bill, Senate file number 1521. It looks like you have a couple testifiers there. You have Esther Obejwa. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and she will correct me. And then we have Carrie Tribble from Avery Beauty, and then we have Michael Ornecki. Is Michael with us, or is Michael? Yeah, no, he's not on. He's not virtual. And do we have Carrie here? Oh, Carrie's virtual. Okay. With that being said, Senator Powell, to your Senate Bill 1521.
Thank you, Chair Champion, for letting me introduce another one of my bills. This is SF 1521, which is asking for an appropriation for the Small Business Assistance Partnership Program. This ask will maintain the funding level invested in this program during the 2023 legislative session. So small businesses play a crucial role in our districts, and small business owners employ nearly half the workforce in Minnesota, creating jobs, expanding tax base, contributing to the vitality of our communities. But starting and maintaining a business presents a lot of challenges, as many of you know. Entrepreneurs especially, new entrepreneurs as well. But access to business resources is always a challenge. Business owners that work with advisors or officers from a nonprofit, whether it's an economic development organization or a CDFI, are more likely to not only avoid costly mistakes, but also is set on a path for success. The Small Business Partnership Program has been helping small businesses in Minnesota succeed for 14 years. This program is a cornerstone of DEED's small business programs through a competitive process. So nonprofit economic development organizations contract with DEED to offer free small business technical assistance to entrepreneurs and small business owners across Minnesota. So this funding is also targeted to serve small business owners and entrepreneurs who are from the BIPOC communities, who are veterans, women, LGBTQ+, rural businesses, people with disabilities. You've got a handout from us, and as noted in the handout, the statistics show that a great return on investment for the state of investments that we put in. There's just great return for us. With the increased investment in 2023 alone, this program helped create and preserve over 20,000 jobs and leverage $158 million in public and private financing. Because of the competitive application process, this program ensures that the dollars are being spent evenly between Greater Minnesota and the metro area, and that nonprofits receiving awards report the data to the Department of Employment and Economic Development so that we can track the impacts of these dollars in our communities. Again, Chair Champion and members, this is such a great program that has existed within DEED, and we hope that we can fund this program so that it can further assist our small businesses and entrepreneurs across the state.
Thank you, Senator Pa. We're going to go to Ms. Noner so she can tell us what we've done in the past around this program. Ms. Noner.
Mr. Chair and members, the Small Business Assistance Partnership Program is currently within the base for DEED in the jobs budget. And in fiscal year 24-25, it received an increase in funding. So over the biennium, it was a total of $12.85 million. And then in the base, beginning of fiscal year 26-27, over the biennium, a total of $5.45 million. And that's an ongoing amount. In previous years, in fiscal year 22-23, a program similar to this has received funding, and we track it as the same program. I think we just updated the language in fiscal year 20, or in the 2023 jobs bill. And that similar program was called Business Development Competitive Grants with some technical assistance to small businesses. And at the time, it would have received $9.85 million in 22-23. And then in Senate File 1521, as Senator Paul mentioned, it is proposing to continue that increase that happened in fiscal year 24-25, so increasing the base from $5.45 million to $12.85 million over the biennium. And as currently written, the bill has this as one-time appropriations, but maybe the intention was to have the increase as one-time, but to keep the base funding. That might be something that needs to be clarified. But beyond that, I think that's everything in the past that has been for this program.
And Ms. and Senator Pa, before we get to your testifier, can you clarify what you all are thinking? Because it looks like there was a bump that happened in 24-25, and then it looks like you all are requesting for that increase to now be the base amount. But I just want to be clear so we can be clear. Senator Pa.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Champion. Yes, I would love to clarify on that. So there was a 5.4 $5 million amount that was in the base funding that was put in 2023. We're not asking for an additional 7.4, which is the 12.85 million as a base. We're asking for a one-time appropriation for 2 years, 2026-27, of the 7.4 million in addition. So not to the base. So the base that was allocated before would stay. And what we're asking now is a one-time, not to the base, but a one-time appropriation.
And when you say the 7.4, is that a 7.4 per year, Senator Pa?
Is that per year, or was that a one-time? Is that for 2 years, right?
Here, let me
ask. I'm just going to look at my bill here. So,
Senator Pye, I think this Ms. Nona.
I take it back. So it's we're asking for 6.425 in fiscal year 2026, and then in 2027 as well.
Okay, maybe I'm the only person that understands or don't understand, because what I'm looking at is if in the base it's been up to this point 5.4 with the exception of the previous years. Let me just ask Ms. Nomer to help us all out here.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. I believe the 7.4 increase for fiscal year 26-27, that's a one-time one-time increase over the biennium. So it's not per year. So originally per year it would be 2.725 million in the base, and this bill is proposing a one-time increase to 6.425 million over the base. So that 7.4 figure is over the biennium.
Okay, so it's over the biennium, and it's still a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to Senator Nelson.
It is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you have a question just on this, because I want to make sure that I go to the other testifiers.
Yes, I'll just be real quick. I couldn't quite hear your last few words. So how much is in the base, and how much additional on top of the base are we looking for in 1521?
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Nelson. Sorry, I was probably facing this way.
Yep, just need to hear it.
So in fiscal year 26-27, the base per year is currently 2.725 million, and this bill is proposing that base to increase to 6.425 million a year. That would be 3.7 million increase per year, or 7.4 million over the biennium.
Thank you. Those are all the numbers I was looking for.
Thank you. All right, we'll now go to the testifiers, and because I think we got that, and then we can go from there. With that being said, Esther Obejewa, I think is how it's pronounced, but you can correct me. Identify yourself for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Champion and members of the committee. My name is Esther Obejewa. I'm the owner of CARE Healthcare Agency located in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Our healthcare temp agency strengthens Minnesota's healthcare system by providing highly qualified professionals to meet urgent needs, ensuring continuity of care in our long-term care facilities. By doing so, we help strengthen the state of Minnesota's healthcare system while providing rewarding job opportunities that support Minnesota's dedicated workforce. During the COVID-19 pandemic, I lost my job as the company could no longer afford to keep me due to the time I needed to take off for my kids. This experience inspired me to create an agency that offers flexible work opportunities for parents, allowing them to support their families without having to choose between their careers and their loved ones. I chose healthcare because I witnessed firsthand the growing need for dedicated professionals in the field. As an immigrant, I faced significant challenge in navigating the complexity of running healthcare temp agency. Within the first month, I ran out of funds and struggled to pay my employees after being denied bank loans. However, Women Venture stepped in, not only provided the necessary funding, but also guiding me throughout financial management, helping to clean up my accounting records, offering ongoing mentorship to ensure my business thrived. We went from having 5 employees in 2021 to 50 employees in 2024. I'm here today in the support of the Senate file 1521 because the more the Senate can do to support entrepreneurs like myself, the more we can see successful business meeting community needs and generating economic prosperity for our entire state.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate you. Thank you for being here. And you might want to just wait, because if the committee has any questions, we would hope that we can engage you. We will now go to Michael Warnecki.
Yep. Thank you, Chairman Champion and members of the committee. My name is Michael Warnecki. I am the business development manager of the Scott County Center for Entrepreneurship. We received an award of $282,000 for this past year through the Deed Small Business Grant Partnership Program. One of Senator Pratt's constituents here to speak. And on behalf of our organization, we support Senate Floor Bill 1521 to maintain the funding levels of the 24-25 biennium. Small businesses are the lifeblood of our community. Being a business owner myself and seeing the resources that we have available to these small businesses, it makes a huge impact. All these businesses have to start somewhere. Whether you look around here in the state of Minnesota and you look at some of these Fortune 500 companies, they all they didn't start at the size that they are, and they had to start here. This is the first time doing this. But our program, like I said before, received a $282,000 grant. And we've seen great impact through it. The businesses that are a part of our program have reported receiving $2.8 million in outside capital that they've been able to use for their businesses. The average wages of their new hires has been reported at $75,000. We've seen 12 full-time jobs created just in our center. We've been able to serve 83 entrepreneurs in the community. And then along with that, we have educational sessions every month, getting these businesses connected, so we have guest speakers. And then on top of that, our program, based on the statistics that we've been able to prove through our program, we received the 2023 Entrepreneurship Support Organization of the Year. And again, I think that this is a program that needs to continue on. And again, we would like to support it.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. If you just wait, we'll go to Carrie Tribble, who's online. And are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
We need a little more volume. All right. Go ahead and give us your 2 minutes of testimony.
Sounds great. Chair Champion, Vice Chair Mohammed, Ranking Member Draham, and members of the committee. My name is Carrie Tribble, and I'm the founder and owner of Avari Beauty, located in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Avari Beauty is an Indigenous-owned esthetician salon and brand. Not only do we perform services, but I created our industry's first sustainable eyelash extensions, and we have both business-to-consumer and business-to-business product lines. I created Avari Beauty with the intention of bringing Indigenous representation and cultural teachings into the beauty industry, inspiring others to define beauty as an act of self-care and to create generational wealth for my family and community. When it came time to expand my business, I was fortunate enough to work with Tyler, an MCCD business advisor, to develop a plan to purchase a building and secure financing. Utilizing MCCD funds, we were able to leverage additional public and private financing, and we've been settled into our new building for the last year. I also received business advice, which was critical during that time and highlights the kind of support that is invaluable. The resources from the Small Business Assistance Partnership Program helped me grow my business and create an opportunity to build wealth for me and my family, and I want that for other entrepreneurs and small business owners too. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify today, and I thank you to Senator Pa for carrying this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you guys may have.
Thank you so very much. We were able to read the closed caption because I think something's going on with your mic, and we had a hard time hearing you. But we did get the essence of your testimony by reading the closed caption, and we really do appreciate you being here. Members, any questions for the testifiers? Or Senator Pa? Seeing none, Senator Pai, you can give us closing comments, and we'll lay Senate file number 1521 on the table for possible inclusion. Senator Pai.
Thank you, Chair Champion and members, for hearing this bill, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. With that, Senate file 1521 will be laid over for possible inclusion. And thank you again to the testifiers. I sincerely appreciate you being here. We will now go to Senator Green, which will be Senate file 1583. Senator Green, welcome to the committee. Come forward. And when you're ready, Senator Green, present your bill. Brad Fitzgerald, who, if you're here, oh, he's virtual, okay. Oh, you do have it there. Senator Green, welcome to the committee. Present your bill. Your testifier will present their 2 minutes by way of Zoom. Senator Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does someone have to offer the bill first, or can I just
go?
Okay.
We're ready to
thank
go.
You, Mr. Chair. I'll just give a very brief introduction, and then I'll turn it over to testifier, and then I'll join in some more and answer some questions. This bill is it's an attempt to try to help out some of the local businesses with some of their staffing problems. Some of the things they have to go through is costing them a lot of money, and I think the bill kind of speaks for itself. It's a very simple bill. It will have DEED use the existing portals that they have to make a few changes and allow for some documentations and some data. But at that, I'll turn it over to my testifier.
All right. Thank you so very much, Senator Green. We'll now go to Brad Fitzgerald, who is the CFO of Occupational Development Center. Mr. Fitzgerald, give us your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, committee members. Thank you, Senator Green, for giving me this opportunity as well. My name is Brad Fitzgerald. As I said, I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Occupational Development Center, based out of northern Minnesota. We are a nonprofit whose mission is to develop the skills of individuals with disabilities by providing opportunities for suitable, sustainable employment that result in greater independence. And today I'm asking you to consider SF 1583, specifically the reporting elements of that, of course, where we can limit the hardships on small, mid-sized businesses specifically that are caused by the current requirements for unemployment qualifications. We've seen a surge in the past year of people applying for positions that they simply do not have intent of actually taking. They are seeking jobs by securing an interview, and that is the last we hear of the individuals. We are finding that numerous candidates are utilizing the scheduled interview and the job offer as the proof of the attempt for occupation in order to continue their unemployment benefits. From December 1st through January 20th, we had 17 no-call, no-show interviews, equating to nearly 80 hours of time wasted for our staff for preparing for those interviews. We take every interview very seriously. Therefore, we put dedicated hours in to make sure that we're prepared to interview so that they can complete the jobs at hand. In that same time frame, we had 4 individuals accept employment offers and then to no-call, no-show within the first days of employment. That equates to an additional 52 hours of labor time for those 4 individuals alone. The raw cost of that is without question an issue, but the physical cost of non-labor time can be tallied, and that's $3,132 in real dollars that we will never see again. The effects on our business, the morale, and the existing staff shortage is crippling.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. Your 2 minutes have gone by. If you hold, because there may be some questions the committee will ask you. In the meantime, is there someone here from DEED that I'd like to have come up? Mr. Boundary, are you here? And as you are approaching the table, if you could make sure you speak directly into the mic and loud enough so that we can hear you. But it's my understanding that DEED already has a fraud portal on the website as of now. So state your name for the record and tell me if I'm mistaken in my understanding, first of all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Devin Boudry, Government Relations Director at DEED. And Senator, you are correct. We have both a fraud reporting portal that Anybody can report fraud. Individuals can report. Employers can report. But there is also another mechanism where employers can raise an issue in their account, and that's sort of the most direct way to get to, you know, staff that are perhaps fraudulently trying to claim unemployment. So two different mechanisms.
So if you walk us through it, right, like for an example, I know that you've just given us two scenarios, just step by step, because I want to just make sure that we're all clear that there is this existing portal and want to see what the mechanisms are in order to identify if someone is just, as I heard Mr. Fitzgerald suggest, that because they want to continue to get unemployment benefits, that they would just, you know, sign up and say they want to, but then a no-show, and just want to see how we interpret that from Dee's perspective, whether that's fraud, whether that's what. But walk us through the process and then answer those questions.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you go to the UI homepage, you'll see two boxes, one for individuals and one for employers. And either one that you click on the home page, there are two links to the fraud reporting page. So that lives, particularly on the employer side, it's on the same page where 160,000 employers access that page four times a year to report their wage detail. And right next to that link is the reporting UI fraud. So then it would take you to a page that would explain more in depth the different types of fraud. So I think the type of fraud that the Senator Green is trying to get to here is described. Identity theft is described, just different types of things. And from there, you would go and you would click into a sort of online form. There are several different categories, not identical to what is listed here, but there are some preset categories, and there's a catch-all other box. And from there, there are also two open-ended text boxes where you can then go and describe further circumstances about what you believe the issue to be. And then you report that, and we look at it. A human on the other end within our UI department will take a look at that and follow up as needed.
So, Mr. Boundary, just to be clear, if you look at line 1.21 and 2.1, the two issues that has been outlined, or even before I do that, if you look at line 1.0 all the way through 1.15, are these some of the elements that are already available for a employer to report within the confines of your existing portal?
Mr. Chair, members, you could raise them or flag them to us, but UI is, you know, everything is very fact specific. So if you are raising a fraud issue, you know, some of these might go to the elements of fraud, but I don't believe that these are creating an additional threshold of fraud. Fraud is spelled out in UI statute in its own subsection. And so these may go to the facts, but these aren't fraud in and of itself.
And so tell me how Dee looks at fraud if these are not fraud itself. Like, I'm just trying to get an understanding. I'm not trying to probe you one way or the other, but I'm just trying to get an understanding of why these would not be considered fraud from Dee's perspective.
Mr. Chair, members, they are not spelled out. Let me find the provision. It's Minnesota Statute 268.182. And these have all of the various, you know, intent thresholds that go into what is fraud and what is not fraud. So some of these, you know, as they add up, they could be elements or go to the various elements, but they are not just at a baseline, you know, check off, this is fraud. We don't know why someone maybe didn't show. We don't know why somebody didn't refuse work or did refuse work or why there was no contact. So there would just be a lot more investigation that would need to go into it.
Any other questions for Mr. Boundary or the testifier? Senator Drahan.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Green, for bringing this forward. The portal, I tried, as you were talking, to get on it here, and I see two, one raise an issue and one file an appeal for someone on the business side. You know, as we have discussed before, I had a constituent reach out to me about his identity being stolen. And they had already cashed two checks from Deed when he called the hotline number. His opinion, and this gentleman is, I think, above average intelligence, and I would call him pretty worldly, heck of a lot more tech savvy than I am. And he said it was not easy to navigate. And the gentleman that he talked to at Deed, who was very helpful, but it took two more checks before it was stopped. And when we look back from the presentation you guys did a few weeks ago, we're talking, what was it, $17 million in fraud through Deed unemployment. It was a very small percentage, but it's still a lot of money. And the nonprofits that just left here would love to get a piece of that. So obviously whatever we're doing isn't working. And I applaud Senator Green for bringing this concept forward. I don't know if it's the answer, but I think we do need to talk about it. And, you know, five checks, that's a lot. And that's too many, in my opinion. So I think the idea of a portal or a more clear portion of the Deed website to track unemployment issues is needed, and it needs to be more responsive than what's happening now. As far as reporting no-shows, I know that's going to be a lot, because in my own experience, it happens quite often. So I understand the frustration from the business community on that. But I think we're not helping people by not holding them accountable. You know, the whole goal is to find a job, which hopefully will turn into a career for people. And I think too many people game the system that do need a little motivation. And I hope this concept can be fleshed out a little bit more, maybe. But I do think there is something needed different. So I just wanted to make the comment, not really a question. But I think it was $17 million, if I remember right, just for the fraud portion. And then you have the incorrect labeling, which I think if you combine all that, it was another $65 million. So we're talking real numbers, and I have been on both ends of that misreporting from a business standpoint, and you know I've had good experience working with Deed unemployment on that, except for those letters I keep on getting. So I owe you an email on that too. But with that, Chair, you know, I do think this is something that needs to be addressed. I think we do need to look, and I think as a committee we should all log on to the portal and see what the usability is. And it isn't a gotcha thing. It's we want people to get on the job track, to get them into a career. That's the goal. That's the whole goal of Deed.
And so, Senator Joyheim, I would agree that we should always, any information that this committee gets, that we should certainly review it and take a look at it. My concern about this bill is that there's a difference between identity theft that you talked about, that was shared with you at a wedding or something of that particular nature, or in writing, I'm not sure, certain, versus a no-show. So to me, those are two distinctively different notions, and I think between now and when we, you know, think about bills, you know, we all can certainly go on there and continue to ask Deed questions about this bill, because I just think that the no-show is probably a little more of a stretch than what you were talking about. It's important to raise, but I think it's a little more of a stretch. Senator Joyheim.
Thank you, Chair, and I would agree they're a little different items. But I think there's more to this bill than just the no-show part. If you read 1.13 and 1.14, if an applicant refuses an offer of work by the employer, and then on line 1.14, that the employer was unable to contact the applicant for an interview or an offer of work or a recall of work.
But Senator Dreham, that's not fraud if somebody doesn't answer the phone. To me, that's vastly different. Is it a problem and it's money that employees are utilizing by calling individuals? I'd be with you. But when we start putting it in a fraud category, that's a different conversation because it's a different context. That's my only concern.
So,
Senator Dreham.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe we just need to have a reporting portal and remove the word fraud. Nomenclature. The whole goal, get people on a career path, mm-hmm. period. There is a problem with people refusing an offer to work or to come back to work. That is a real issue. And I think it should be reported. So if we have to have a oral amendment that I don't know if the author would agree to remove the word fraud from 1.5 and 1.6 and not call it fraud, call it something else. But I think there is a real problem with people offering other people jobs and them not accepting them. And, or a place of employment that you would, and I've had that happen to me many times, where I had 110 employees, and you would have, on the hospitality end, you'd have a college student work for you in the summer. They graduate, go get another job, and then because it was within 12 months, it would ding my history when their job didn't work out. And I said repeatedly, I would hire them back in a second because they were good employees. So from an employer standpoint, we're being penalized and taking money out of our compensation bucket that we want to pay our people more because they're refusing to come back to work.
So, Senator Dreham, I'm not questioning what you're saying. That sounds like a legitimate issue or something for Deed to look at. My concern is in this context, it just seems to be a little more concerning for us to start looking at some other things that falls outside of this portal. It sounds like in this portal, there's the possibility for an employer to talk about it or communicate, and perhaps we can continue to have a conversation with Deed about, is there any relief from what you're talking about? When it comes to your compensation fund being deemed, just to give us more clarity about that, because the whole idea is that we do want people to work. There's no question about that, but I don't think it's right for us to call things fraud. That's not fraud. It may be another problem that we need to deal with in real time, but I think it would be more of a stress to call it fraud. Any other questions from any committee member before we have Senator Green provide his closing comments before we lay this bill on the table? Senator Pa.
I'm wondering if we have, I'm sorry, I came kind of late to this. I'm wondering, do we have someone from Deed here?
Deed, that's them, and they already went through the process already and talked about the portal that they already have, that they have a portal already. And so and we can talk offline if you are not in.
Okay, so I have one question then. If something like this were to pass, would Deed have the capacity to be able to actually check the information that's being put there by employers to make sure that it is correct? Because I guess my biggest concern is that employers could put all kinds of information into here that states all kinds of things. And if the employee is not able to refute that information or have a conversation to clear up, how that's going to impact their ability to find employment. And so I just cannot foresee that Deed would be able to unless I'm wrong, be able to check every piece of information that would be reported on the system to make sure it's correct and hear from both sides. So that would be my biggest concern.
Mr. Bauer. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pott. So when somebody uses our existing portal now, someone does check. But under this legislation, it's not clear to the extent that what we would have to go through to verify each and every claim. And then, of course, Subdivision 4 would then charge us with providing a list of, you know, potential dings or files that may or may not be fully verified. So, you know, Tom wouldn't do this to me, but Mr. Melton could submit 10 different claims for whatever reason against me, and I would not know at this point in time, and that could be submitted to an employer under this language. So,
yeah. Senator Pott, any follow-up?
I just want to make a statement that I'd be really concerned about employees being able to, one, find reemployment, but two, access unemployment insurance because of this. So it's it does not seem like, I understand kind of maybe the goal of this, but I absolutely don't believe that this bill, I believe that this bill is going to do more harm than what it's intended to meet the goals. So thank you.
Mr. Chair.
And again, I was going to say something, Mr. Baldry.
If I may, Mr. Chair, so when in the other mechanism I mentioned where an employer can go into an account and raise an issue, that then does bring the employer and the employee together, and we do an investigation, there's a determination, and that goes to both employer and employee. So in that situation, it does go to both.
All right, any other questions before we lay 1583 on the table for possible
inclusion? Mr. Chair, can I close?
Will close. I just want to make sure that there are no additional questions. Any more? Seeing that, Senator Green, you will give us the last statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because I have a few things to say. One, I think that the bill has been looked at, and a lot of things have been missed on this bill. Now, there is a fraud component, obviously. If you're supposed to be looking for a job and you're going in, making an appointment so that you can put down that you looked for a job, that there is an element of fraud there. If that bothers you, that could come out. But the other issue that's going on here is that this bill is designed to have a database. And where in the case of my testifier, just in the first few months of the year, if they're sitting at $3,000 over $3,000 in staff time to sit there and wait for somebody that doesn't show up or doesn't call, if you times that out toward the year, you could be looking at half a person's wages. That's $16,000 to $18,000 basically, maybe more. And so what this would do, it would use the existing portal for the employers to go in and say, this person had a interview and they didn't show up and they didn't call. Or they accepted the position and they didn't show up and they didn't call. Now, if that happens once, twice, three times, then that's probably what somebody will look at. But our employers are looking for good employees. And so I don't think they're going to be lying on anybody. Okay, that's not even an issue. But if it starts to happen four, five, six times, not only if that portal is there, could Deed look at that and say, hey, there's some red flags going on here, but other employers can say, you know what, this person has came in for an interview seven times and they never showed up. I might not want to waste my time and another $500, $600, $700 to have somebody sit here for 2 hours waiting for somebody that doesn't show up and doesn't call. It's not a complicated bill. It's not a gotcha bill. It's looking at employers like the nonprofit who are screaming for help. They just want to have help. And they're spending money that should be put back into the community for people that don't show up. That's what this bill is. It's not complicated, and if the word fraud bothers you and one of you wants to make an oral amendment to take it out, I'll accept that, but I think that something needs to be done. I don't think it's a big ask for Deed to use their existing portal to have another requirement. And if you listen to the testifier from Deed, and thank you for being here, but the process that he was explaining is complicated. Can you imagine going online every single time somebody doesn't show up and having to fill out that paperwork? Now you've got even more money that you can't afford to spend. So this would be this would simplify the matter, and I think it would be well to be putting it in. Thank you.
With that being said, Senate File 1583 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you to the testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Baldry, and thank you to Mr. Fitzgerald. Members, now we have Senator Putnam, who's with us. We're going to, at least he was with us. Oh, there he is. We will look at Senate File number 1453. And just for clarity, Senator Putnam, on 1453, you only have one testifier. That's Bob Kill, and he's joined you at the table. Senator Putnam, introduce yourself for the record and present your bill.
Thank you very much for getting here to this bill, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for your attention. A couple years ago, we had a company in my town called Electrolux, built refrigerators for years. People got their first job at Electrolux. They raised their kids there. It was a core of my community. Manufacturing is a key to the economic and cultural viability of Greater Minnesota and to many of our communities. This bill we have here before us are two appropriations to help Enterprise Minnesota help build manufacturing capacity and to support those companies throughout the state. Senate File 1453 appropriates $4 million to help Enterprise Minnesota support Minnesota's small manufacturing companies and their employees. They provide services in many areas, but current demand is high in employee retention, talent, and leadership development. Continuous improvement, strategy, revenue growth, and preparing for the implementation of technology and automation. These resources are necessary to allow our homegrown manufacturers to compete and to continue to provide high-wage careers. Members, the story I was just telling you about Electrolux, those people worked in those jobs for 40 years sometimes. It was a lifestyle, and manufacturing has functioned that way. Manufacturing employment has functioned that way for Minnesotans throughout the state for years. But they are struggling because of some of the issues that we just mentioned, and this bill will take care of that issue, put us in the right direction. So SF 1453 supports two specific proposals. The Made in Minnesota program will enable Enterprise Minnesota to assist small manufacturers with preparing their employees to deploy technology and automation into their operations. The second portion is an appropriation to Enterprise Minnesota that has been in state statute since 2008 under the name GAP. It's a direct investment for small manufacturers that need help to stay in business and grow through the essential services that we mentioned above. We have here today with us Bob Kill, present CEO of Enterprise Minnesota, to testify to the value of this legislation. While we don't have client testifiers here today, since the hearing was scheduled last Friday, you do have in front of you a document that shows all the company logos that Enterprise Minnesota has helped with in the past because of this important state investment. Many of them could be in your own districts. So with no further ado, Mr. Kill.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Before we go to Mr. Kill, we're going to ask Ms. Nomer to kind of go through the financial picture, because it also looks like you all are attempting to change the name. That I will also ask our Senate counsel to describe for us as well. So Ms. Nomer first, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, Enterprise Minnesota received $1 million in fiscal year 24-25 from the jobs budget, and that was one-time funding. And then, as Senator Putnam stated, this bill is proposing $2 million each year total for two separate appropriations, and that, as written, is an ongoing amount, I believe. Yep, so there's no mention of one-time funding, and I think that's all I have for you.
Thank you. And Ms. Dorfontaine, I see in 2.7 to 2.9 is looking to change the term Small Business Growth Acceleration Program to Made in Minnesota. Can you help us understand, if you know why, or the impact of this request on 2.7 to 2.9?
Mr. Chair, members, there is an existing statute that's on line 2.9 that's cited there, and the program is the Small Business Growth Acceleration Program. It looks like they're trying to rebrand it as Made in Minnesota. And so this is just a revisor instruction within that statute. I think it's about 15 occurrences of the Small Business Growth Acceleration Program that would be changed to Made in Minnesota
And
program.
If you could tell me right now, where is the Small Business Growth Acceleration Program being held?
Mr. Chair and members, this chapter 1160 is the Enterprise Minnesota Inc. chapter, so it talks about, you know, what the duties and how it's comprised and how it works. And so this program is within that chapter, the Enterprise Minnesota, the way they function under that chapter. So it's one of their programs, and it talks.
Indeed.
Well, the Enterprise Minnesota is its own organization, Enterprise Minnesota Inc. It's kind of unique that we have a corporation that's in statute, but we do have several instances of that. So, Mr. Kill could perhaps talk a little bit more about, you know, some history. I mean, it was called originally Greater Minnesota Corporation, and then it was Minnesota Technology Inc., and now it's Enterprise Minnesota Inc., but it is a statutory construction, and so that is how it's organized in this program. It's quite unique, and so I'm sure he could tell us a lot more about the history and why it's in statute and all of those good things.
So with that being said, Mr. Kill, if you could provide your 2 minutes of testimony, and you might want to do your 2 minutes of testimony, and then I can ask you the question, which gives you a little more time. So with that being said, Mr. Kill.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bob Kill. I'm the president and CEO of Enterprise Minnesota. Enterprise Minnesota is a statutory 501c3 nonprofit consulting organization, and we're also one of 50 federal manufacturing extension partnerships across the U.S., helping small manufacturing companies. We're here to ask you to support a Senate file 1435, which invests the $4 million in what we consider essential job-creating services for our small manufacturers throughout the state. Keep in mind, manufacturing provides some of the best high-wage jobs and are really the lifeblood of many communities. Senate file 1435 makes two investments. $2 million for the Made in Minnesota program to help manufacturers apply new technology and automation critical for small manufacturers, and $2 million to enable us to reach and deliver our services. Keep in mind that the 250 or fewer employees in a company, that's over 80% of Minnesota's manufacturers, so very small. There are over 8,000 manufacturers, and they provide about 325,000 jobs, which is 11% of Minnesota's jobs and 14% of the wages for an average weekly wage of over $1,300. This past year, we helped about 180 small manufacturers. This bill will help us reach significantly more companies across the entire state. Senate File 1435 will also unlock federal matching dollars. For each dollar the state invests, we can leverage a federal dollar. And without this investment, federal match dollars will be lost and the manufacturers will not be helped as much as possible. Both programs, because of our federal affiliation in the bill, have reporting requirements that validate the return on these investments, and historical results are very impressive. An independent client survey shows over 12,000 jobs created and sales growth of over $1.4 billion.
Mr. Kill, your time is up.
Thank you, sir.
If you have one last sentence, that will do it.
I hope you will support the investments included in Senate File 1435 for our small manufacturers.
So, Mr. Kill, question for you. You said that there's 180 manufacturers that you all helped with the $1 million allocation before. And first of all, tell me if I have that number right. And number two, share with me where those businesses were they all in Greater Minnesota? Were they in urban Minnesota, or what's the breakdown? Mr. Gill.
Thank you, Chair. This past year, we did help about 180 small manufacturers across the state. You can go to Viking, Minnesota, which is a 7-hour drive from here in the Northwest state. And obviously, it's much more expensive to serve that. We also serve many metropolitan companies. 50% of the manufacturing base is in the 7-county metro, and 50% is in greater Minnesota, so it is statewide.
So if we can get that information, if we don't have it already, that would be good. And then my second question is, considering the uncertainty of what's going on in Washington, D.C., help me understand how much you all currently get from the federal government, and what is your prospect of receiving any additional funds from the federal government? Mr. Keel.
We can draw from the federal government up to $3.2 million. We get that only by spending money to help manufacturers. It is not given to us. We have to draw that by expending money to help small manufacturers. And obviously, the further away from the metropolitan, the more expensive it is to provide our consulting services to the clients.
And now answer the second part of my question. Previously, you could draw from there. Has there been any indication to you all that that fund is going to continue? Because it appears to me that there's been some discussion about freezing certain federal grants. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I could predict what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, but the fact is we believe that we're reasonably solid intactness because manufacturing is being talked about a lot, of drawing it back to the United States. And you can't draw manufacturing back to the United States without the small manufacturers being the core of that.
Any other questions for Mr. Keel or for the great Senator Putnam? Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first, Senator Putnam, I'm hoping you have room for me on this bill. Mr. Chair, I just want to speak highly of Enterprise Minnesota. I have been to a number of their roundtables. I've met a number of the manufacturers. I think I've been a speaker at some of your events. And what they are doing regarding manufacturing is just key. And we know how important that is, that we not lose manufacturing in this country. There's a lot of room to continue to lead in manufacturing, and I'm very hopeful that your budget will allow for, once again, funding this highly successful program. They also have, Mr. Chair, you might like to know, they also have worked closely with our career tech as far as training young people to get into these manufacturing jobs. And I've just seen some of the success, and I just am amazed at what Enterprise Minnesota has been able to do. And I also like the fact, Mr. Chair, that it also builds upon federal funds as well. We always like to see our money also bring in other money to help with this as well. So I just can't speak highly enough, and hope you can add me on your bill, Senator Putnam. Thank you.
Any other questions? One of the things that I do recognize is that this is a 501c3, which means it's a nonprofit, and I know there's been a lot of discussion in the legislature about nonprofits, and so that's why I think it's also we should be very careful when we put all nonprofits in one category, because then you end up criticizing someone like Mr. Keel, who's here because this is a 501c3. Am I correct,
Mr. Keel? We are legally a 501c3 nonprofit. We are a fee-based consulting. All of our clients pay something for the services they receive.
Thank you so much. Any other questions for Senator Putnam before we lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion? And thank you for your presentation today as well. Senator Nelson.
I just
want to know, it's Senate Bill 1435.
Did I say something else? Well,
did I say 1435?
It is.
Oh, the testifier did. I know. I said 1453. Okay, 1453. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to your comment on the nonprofit, and I know we on both sides sometimes lump nonprofits all into one, but I have no problem giving resources to nonprofits that come back and are held accountable and are actually doing really good things with the dollars.
Absolutely.
I think holding them accountable is an important piece that we can't forget. So thank you.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, right? Because I think it's important for people to talk about it, but for us also to be very careful so that we don't lump folks all together as if nonprofit is a bad word and only for-profit is a good word. They both have their strengths and weaknesses. So with that being said, before we lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion, seeing that there's no other questions, we're going to let Senator Putnam have the last word in our tradition. Senator Putnam.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Senator Nelson, for wanting to sign on, and that's good. Thank you, Mr. Kill, for your testimony, but also thank you to you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill, for understanding how important manufacturing jobs can be in terms of social mobility, but also appreciating that it's important if we have questions about accountability that we are ourselves accountable and that we ask them of everyone who's before us. So thank you very much for all of that, Mr. Chair.
The only other concern that I have about this bill is that it comes, they are making a request from the general fund. And that is always going to be a task because where we are. But we will lay it over from possible inclusion and have that conversation later. Senate file number 1453 is laid over for possible inclusion. With that, we are now going to Senator Putnam's last bill for today, which is Senate file number 1624. It is Propel Nonprofits, or another nonprofit, right? Grants appropriation. And Garrett Backus, if you would come up as the Chief Advancement Officer. So Senator Putnam, when you're ready, identify yourself for the record and please go forward with your overview and testimony related to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill about Propel Nonprofits. We all know how important nonprofits are today, given the extreme need that our communities are suffering and the fact that government can't do everything for everybody. So it's our job to help people help each other, and that's what nonprofits do. Our nonprofit sector is, as I understand it, a huge chunk of our workforce and in the work that's being done in the state of Minnesota right now. This Propel Nonprofits bill is also not a new thing. I think members of this committee are familiar with this organization and the great work that they've done, that they have done that work and come back to us and been held accountable and have done this work consistently. What Senate File 1624 does is it appropriates $2 million for Propel to work with nonprofits across the state on training, capacity building, strategic consulting, and more. It helps create sustainability and allows these organizations to be better positioned to be strong partners for the state in carrying out the important work in community and stewarding state dollars well. We need the nonprofits that we have, and we need those nonprofits to be functional and successful. I think there's a good chance that many of us members serve on the boards of various nonprofits, and we know what a big struggle it is for those early nonprofits to get going. What Propel does is it provides the support to help these companies, these nonprofits, be successful and fulfill their missions and build their own sustainability. Now, as I mentioned, members, we have funded Propel in the past, 2017 to 2019, with a $1 million appropriation. 21 grantees received $50,000. In 2019 to 2021, the program account was reduced to $500,000, and 11 grantees were able to suffer through COVID and help their communities. In 22-23, a $2 million appropriation enabled Propel to help 38 grantees. That's 38 nonprofits who are now in a better position to do their work with their own accountability, competence, and success to help our communities do what they can. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to my testifier.
And before we go to your testifier, we'll go to Ms. Nomer to clarify this because there's a couple things that's going on. One, there was money from the Workforce Development Fund, and there's also other requests from the general fund. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. And I think you said $1 million, but I think it's $2 million a year, so that's $4 million over the biennium, as I understand it. But I'm going to the fiscal analyst, who is the expert, Ms. Nona.
Mr. Chair and members, I was going to say, Senator Putnam almost did my job for me in the past, so thank you. I would say the only thing that Senator Putnam might have not mentioned, I might have missed it, is in the most recent biennium, fiscal year 24-25, Propel received $4 million from the general fund. And this bill is proposing $4 million over the biennium of 26-27 for the from the general fund. And in the past, it's been funded from both. So in 22 and 23, for example, $2 million was from the Workforce Development Fund.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. The math mistake was mine as well. I said $2 million. I meant $2 million per year. So it was $4 million. That's...
So no problem there, Senator Putnam. All right. We will now go to your testifier, who is... none other than Mr. Backus. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly? If not, correct me.
Yes, I'd say it Backus, but thank you, Chair
Backus,
Champion.
Okay.
Yes. Well, thank you, Chair Champion, members of the committee, and Senator Putnam. My name is Garrett Backus, Chief Advancement Officer of Propel Nonprofits. With expertise in nonprofit finance, strategy, and board governance, Propel Nonprofits supports over 600 nonprofits each year throughout the state of Minnesota. Our capacity building services include capital access program, robust strategic consulting, training program, accounting and finance guidance, technical assistance, online tools and resources, and more. We provide nonprofit staff and board leaders across all fields of service and at any life cycle stage with these supports. Nonprofits play a vital role in community, as many of you have touched on already, appreciation for that. They fill gaps in healthcare, human services, education, housing, community development, and more. They are partners to state agencies and philanthropy, working to make life and community better for all. When these organizations are strengthened, the communities they serve benefit. With support from the state of Minnesota via the Department of Employment and Economic Development, NIGP, as the program is named, has helped 123 community-based nonprofit organizations build their knowledge, skills, and capacities since 2017. Today, I'm asking that the state continue supporting this great work with an appropriation in the next biennium. As is detailed in the handouts in front of you, the program has driven great outcomes, helping nonprofits develop financial and administrative systems for tracking their financial health, as well as positioning nonprofits to accept and administer state contracts in the future. Additionally, it has driven employment outcomes by helping establish paying jobs in the nonprofit sector. You also see that the program has benefited communities across the state of Minnesota and supporting nonprofits throughout the state. As Becca Simpson, Executive Director of the Park Place, stated in appreciation of their support of the program, NIGP helped us build a strong foundation that led to two new staff, two new programs, and a building we can work from. Without NIGP, I genuinely do not know where we would be as an organization today. With your continued support of this program, we can continue to fuel the impact and effectiveness of nonprofits as they serve their communities throughout the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Bacchus. I want to make sure that if you have one more sentence, that would do it.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
There we go. Perfect, let me just say. All right, so any other questions? Now, before they get to the questions, one place where there will be a concern, and I'll tell you this now, one is any money that is coming from the general fund is going to be a problem. Number two, on line 1.10 to 1.11, where it says, of this amount, up to 10% may be used by Propel nonprofits for administrative costs, because we do not ever do that, especially at that number. So I just wanted to be upfront about that, because we've been trying to make it clear to everyone about the notion of administrative costs. With that being said, any other questions for Propel or Senator Putnam? Seeing none, we will let Senator Putnam give his closing comments before we lay Senate file number 1624 on the table for possible inclusion. Senator Putnam.
Thank you very much for considering this bill, Mr. Chair. It's a great opportunity for us to do good for people to do well.
Thank you so much. With that being said, Senate file number 1624 is laid on the table for possible inclusion. Members, you had that. I have my own right here. There, Tom. Okay, members, that concludes our business for this meeting. Our next hearing will be on Wednesday, February 26th. With that being said, the meeting is adjourned. Members, but I will ask you to try to get here on time so that we can start on time and have a quorum. Those who did make it on time, thank you. Those who let us know that you couldn't make it on time, thank you for that. But we're going to ask that you all get here on time if you can. Thank you so much. Have a great, great day, members.